It's Wednesday, March 18th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. In case you're wondering where the stash was for yesterday on St. Patrick's Day, you didn't miss anything. There was no stash yesterday. I had taken ill with some of the flu that's going around up here in Portland, Oregon, and spent most of my day horizontal. Thank goodness I had the world's greatest anti-emetic medicine next to me, or it could have been much worse. We're doing a little better today, but still feeling a little under the weather, so excuse me if my voice isn't its normal baritone self. I hope you had a good St. Patrick's Day yesterday, and you enjoyed it with a little of your own sharing of the green. Coming up on today's stash, we're going to adjust things just a little bit because of yesterday's missed stash, specifically with our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. This week is Mary Jane Week, where all the tunes are about and titled Mary Jane. So since we missed yesterday's, today you get a twofer. That's right, a double shot of Daily Toker Tunes featuring Mary Jane on today's stash. It also means that I'm a little behind in my interview segment, so I only have one interview for today. It's our regular cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We're going to be discussing that recent study that was brought out by Marijuana Policy Project on the false positives of common drug testing equipment used by law enforcement. And we'll also talk about a study about binge drinking among adolescents and how that is so much more harmful for their developing brains than the use of cannabis. Not to say that we want teenagers using cannabis, but, well, facts are facts. I also want to give a shout out to the folks who have been sending me emails in my new capacity as Normal's chapter outreach coordinator. It's amazing how much interest there is these days in reforming marijuana laws. I just answered an email from someone in Latvia, the Eastern European country, formerly Soviet bloc, who's looking to start a Latvia Normal. I'll keep you posted on how that turns out. But the state I'm receiving the most requests for lately has been the state of Georgia. While Normal does have a campus chapter at the University of Georgia, we don't have a Normal chapter in the state of Georgia, and we've got to do something about that. So, any Georgians out there who would like to start a Normal chapter, please send me an email at stash@normal.org. I'll put you in touch with the other folks who've been emailing me, and maybe we can get something started. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we of course have your hemp headlines, including some great breaking news about the Obama administration possibly reviewing the rejection of Dr. Lyle Craker's petition to grow marijuana for scientific studies. We've also got some Reefer Madness featuring John Marijuana Unicorns Walters, the former drug czar, and as noted before, cannabis science and a double shot of Daily Toker Tunes. All that coming up for you on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Obama administration likely to review University of Massachusetts scientists' bid to grow marijuana. From the National Journal. Days before President Bush left office in January, his administration fired a parting shot at Professor Lyle Craker's 8-year quest to cultivate marijuana for medical research by abruptly denying him a federal license, despite a nearly 2-year-old DEA law judge's recommendation that he receive one. But the new administration, led by President Obama, who has publicly backed the use of marijuana for medical purposes to stave off pain, might reverse the decision and keep Craker's license application from going up in smoke. A source familiar with the case said the White House will likely demand that the decision be reviewed. The source said, quote, basically, they want to do an autopsy of what occurred and have it go through a proper review, end quote. Craker, who is based at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, is cautiously optimistic Obama will do to the denial of the marijuana license what he has done to other Bush administration decisions on such hot-button cultural issues as embryonic stem cell research and the abortion gag rule affecting overseas family planning groups. This would be outstanding news, and in my opinion, an even better indicator than the cessation of the medical marijuana dispensary raids in California and Colorado, that the Obama administration is seriously putting science back in our government. Last month, 16 House members wrote Attorney General Holder asking him to amend or withdraw the DEA's final order on Craker's application so the president's new head of DEA could review the application. They wrote that the administrative law judge's decision, quote, left no doubt, end quote, that Craker is qualified to cultivate marijuana for research purposes. The members, led by Representative John Oliver, Democrat of Massachusetts, said they were concerned the Bush administration's ruling violated the spirit of a January 20 memorandum from White House Chief of Staff Emanuel that essentially froze all 11th-hour final orders. The memo, distributed shortly after the inauguration, asked agency officials to reconsider final rules and regulations that have been published in the Federal Register but have yet to take effect. I knew the Obama administration was going through all of former President Bush's executive orders and rulings with a fine-tooth comb, but this is the first time I've heard of this ruling in particular being mentioned. Update on Derek Kopp, student shot by Michigan Drug Task Force. Details are starting to trickle in as Derek starts to recover from the shooting that ripped through his right lung and liver and broke 2 ribs, as we reported last week. Police knocked on Kopp's sliding glass door on the ground floor of the Campus View Apartments and Townhouses at approximately 9 p.m. on March 11th. When he opened the door, police beamed a flashlight at him. As Kopp raised his hand to shield his eyes, the unnamed officer fired 1 shot, hitting him in the upper right chest. The Ottawa County Sheriff's detective, who fired the shot, has been placed on paid leave. Kopp's parents are particularly upset that they had to learn about the shooting from a nurse at Spectrum Health Butterworth Hospital at 3 a.m. on March 12th, about 6 hours after the incident, rather than from police. The 20-year-old native of Spring Arbor and graduate of Jackson Community College supported Prop 1, Michigan's medical marijuana initiative, which passed with 63% of the vote in November. Imagine having to learn from a nurse that your son had been shot in a botched law enforcement action 6 hours after the shooting. I suppose that in the police eyes, Derek Kopp is just some left-wing hippie peacekeeping liberal, as Derek describes himself, and his parents don't deserve the courtesy of informing them they just shot their son. A small but defiant group of 25 protesters were outside the Ottawa County Sheriff's Department holding signs that said, "Shooting? Why?" and "Justify this shooting." A march is scheduled at 1 p.m. on Friday in Grand Rapids. The Kopp family has retained a Grand Rapids attorney, Fred Dilley, and video of the police's after-action press conference can be found at rawstory.com through a link at our post at stash.normal.org. Homeland Security Secretary Chertoff on legalization, quote, "It won't work," end quote. As 5 congressional panels held hearings in recent days on Mexican drug cartel violence and border security, former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff had one thing to say about legalizing marijuana in hopes of easing the bloodshed. Quote, "It won't work," end quote. In a conversation with this columnist Saturday, Mr. Chertoff likened today's drug wars in Mexico to previous mob wars in America, which, he pointed out, didn't stop once Prohibition ended in 1933. This is the "but there will still be crime" argument. The idea is that legalization of marijuana won't help end the bloodshed in the drug war because the drug cartels will just turn to another drug or crime to continue their existence. This is the slippery slope exactly opposite of the logic behind the "why don't we just legalize rape and there'll be no more rapes" argument. Well, of course criminals will keep committing crimes. That's what criminals do. But the question is how legalization will affect the rest of society. We found that implementing alcohol prohibition raised the consumption of hard liquor and increased the homicide rate. We saw both decline after prohibition's repeal. Implementing prohibition led to the following statistical increases. Police funding increased $11 million. Arrests for prohibition law violations increased 102%. Arrests for drunken and disorderly conduct increased 41%. Arrests of drunken drivers increased 81%. Thefts and burglaries increased 9%. Homicides, assault, and battery increased 13%. Number of federal convicts increased 561%. Federal prison population increased 366%. And total federal expenditures on penal institutions increased 1,000%. Now, what did the mob get into after the end of Prohibition? Well, drugs, gambling, and prostitution, along with various traditional robberies, extortions, and graft. But the huge majority of people who consume alcohol were no longer criminals. By definition, crime was reduced enormously by ending Prohibition. Legalizing marijuana will not end the Mexican drug cartels, but it will dry up 60% to 75% of their business. They cannot just manufacture demand for heroin and cocaine. With less money, they can buy less firepower and bribe fewer officials. Will the fire of drug crime go out? No, but at least we can stop pouring gasoline on it.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Former drug czar Walters, medical marijuana is an utter fraud, and dispensaries of California fund the mafias of Mexico.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist.
When the U.S. taxpayers no longer fund your demonizing of the sick, disabled, dying, and sense-threatened people who use medical marijuana, what do you do? Well, if you're former drug czar John Marijuana Unicorns Walters, you get yourself a cushy job at the Hudson Institute, a think tank founded by Herman Kahn. Kahn's work was part of the dogma of Cold War ideology, having coined the term mutually assured destruction regarding the nuclear capabilities of the U.S. and then USSR. He also coined the term megadeath, meaning 1 million deaths, which since has been appropriated and misspelled by the band Megadeth. Kahn is reportedly one of the inspirations for the character of Dr. Strangelove in the 1964 film of the same name. So this post is part of John Walters' most recent work for Kahn's Hudson Institute.
In recent months, more Americans have learned what those living on the border have known for several years. The Mexican government is in a deadly fight with extremely violent gangs. The administration should be fighting for full funding of the Merida program of assistance from the United States. Our vital equipment and training will protect innocent lives in both our countries. But the White House has been unengaged as Congress is on a path to cut $100 million in support beyond the $100 million reduction of the last Congress, at a time when Mexico knows as well as we do that Congress is recklessly stimulating and earmarking billions, slashing funding for our national security is grossly irresponsible. On the key issue of illegal drugs, the widely recognized source of criminal power in Mexico, the Obama administration is lurching dangerously in reverse. In his first statement on drug policy, Attorney General Eric Holder suggested he may no longer enforce federal law against trafficking marijuana if the traffickers call their marijuana medical. Both U.S. and Mexican officials at all levels know that medical marijuana is an utter fraud used to undermine drug enforcement in the United States. Mexican officials also know, as does the Justice Department, that much of the marijuana sold in the dispensaries of California funds the mafias of Mexico. Marijuana sales are the single largest source of drug profits for these criminals, on top of funds from kidnapping, protection rackets, alien smuggling, and car theft. Not enforcing our marijuana laws makes these terrorists stronger. Pretending to take legalization seriously makes them stronger still. What do we think the brave officers risking their lives in Mexico feel when our Attorney General sounds like he is going to do less to help? Is it too much to expect him to make clear that enforcing our marijuana laws reduces addiction here and saves lives in Mexico? I hope that this will change. The recently released Forbes list of wealthiest people in the world includes one of Mexico's most dangerous criminal leaders. President Obama should make it his goal to help President Calderon apprehend this man and those like him as soon as possible.
Walters offers no proof that California dispensary medicine is funding Mexican mafias, but evidence and proof were never his strong suit anyway. I find it interesting that a stimulus package intended to reverse the economic damage of 8 years of laissez-faire policies of the previous administration, Walters' administration, is considered recklessly stimulating, but throwing another $100 million to $200 million at the failed Merida policies is vital equipment and training. I'd say something about pots and kettles, but considering this blog's subject and the president's race, that's too many puns for one day. But suppose that Walters is right, and some Mexican-grown and Mexican-trafficked marijuana makes it onto dispensary shelves. What's keeping American farmers from supplying those dispensaries, John, and cutting the Mexicans out of the marketplace? Pretending to take legalization seriously scares the hell out of Mexico's drug criminals. Do you suppose Al Capone circulated many petitions in support of the 21st Amendment?
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins. No, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. We've reached the middle of the week again, and that means another dose of cannabis science with our good friend Dr. Mitch Earlywine. And welcome back, Mitch.
Great to be on the show.
Oh, well, I've been a little under the weather lately, so my apologies if I'm a little disjointed on the interview today, but I wanted to talk to you about some recent studies and a press conference in particular that was hosted by the Marijuana Policy Project, and this had to do with false positives in roadside drug testing, and just in the issue of drug testing overall, I was wondering if you could comment on that study and the problems with drug testing for cannabis.
You know, this was an intriguing study and uncovered some things that a lot of us have been suspecting for a long time, but that basically that the rates of false positives for cannabis in these tests is alarmingly high. And I feel like the issue of drug testing is, you know, an important one because we have to really think about, well, is this really worth it and why are we even doing it? Roadside tests for cannabis metabolites make no sense at all because you could have metabolites in your urine from literally 2 weeks ago. So you could not be at all impaired during the driving performance and still get labeled as impaired just based on a urine screen. But then over and above that, these data suggest that, in fact, even if you hadn't used cannabis in months and months, you could end up being labeled as having done so because the threshold for the false positives is unacceptable in these tests, literally saying that folks who have not used cannabis have. And obviously that's the sort of thing that leads to, you know, just gross injustices in the way these kinds of laws are enforced.
Well, it seems like, you know, we're getting this push for these zero tolerance per se DUID laws where any detection of any metabolite here, you're considered as drunk as the worst drunk driver. This also I'm seeing it in a lot of the medical marijuana states too. And the cry from law enforcement always seems to be, you know, how are we ever going to detect whether these people are impaired under the use of marijuana? And my response to that was, if you can't detect that they're driving poorly in the first place, what's the issue? What is the facts, the science here behind people's use of cannabis and driving, and are these fears by law enforcement overblown?
So Tony Liguori reviewed this literature in my book, Pot Politics, and in fact, the impairment to related to cannabis use and cannabis alone is not as dramatic as some folks suspect. And some work done in the Netherlands, as controversial as that may be, suggests that really the impairments are really mild, even if someone is intoxicated at the time. But in addition, I feel like the way to do this is a roadside sobriety test. Can you walk the straight line? Can you follow the officer's finger with your eyes? Can you do these physical tasks that tend to correlate reasonably well with being able to drive? Those are much better than any kind of metabolite test because people can be impaired for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. We have data to suggest that antihistamines like Benadryl can impair driving performance, and I feel like it's much better to see, can somebody actually do these physical tasks than, oh, gee, what kind of molecules are in their pee?
Exactly. I could care less, you know, what it is that's impairing the person. We don't want the impaired person on the road, period. And, yeah, that's why we need some better forms of impairment testing here. Now, with respect to this drug testing and the study that they found, this MPP study, did they give a number, any quantification for how many of these tests are false positives?
In fact, the estimates are something that you have to appreciate with sort of a confidence interval, if you will. So I would rather just say the fact that they're there is unacceptable. Okay. I'm not saying they have to go down to zero, but the current estimates are just clearly too high. So I feel like, in truth, we need to focus on a roadside sobriety test in this kind of situation rather than any of these urine screens, even if they are necessarily perfect. Urine, by its very nature, just can't test for what we're really looking for, which is impairment at the time. Some folks who are, you know, avid employers have, you know, asked me about this thing for employee performance as well. And again, I feel like the key is can you do the job, not what is the content of molecules in your body. And so, in fact, a number of companies have developed really intriguing motor tasks that folks can do at the beginning of a shift that reveal if they're impaired because of fatigue or illness or any number of sources that are much better than trying to rely on bodily fluids to tell how somebody's going to do on the job. And in truth, if somebody's screwing up on the job, send them home.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the reason is so much as just giving them the chance to get better or do whatever they need to do. And I feel like the idea that, you know, somehow this is a measure of character or the content of your urine is going to reveal how moral a person you are is what's sort of underlying these, and that's just so completely fallacious.
Yeah, if I may paraphrase Dr. King, I have a dream of the day where we're judged by the quality of our work, not the content of our pee. Oh, boy. And another topic here, just to shift gears just a little bit. You know, we talk about adolescents, and we talk a lot about how cannabis use by adults is one thing, but by adolescents is another because of the developing brain and all of the hormonal changes that are going on through adolescence. You've come up with some a paper you found here that mentions binge drinking in comparison to cannabis, and I think our listeners would be quite interested to hear about it.
In fact, this is a crew from the joint program down in San Diego who reviewed a lot of literature on different drugs and their impact on adolescent brain development. Normal has been at the forefront of saying, you know, cannabis is not for kids. And in my book, The Parent's Guide, I emphasize this fact as well. But the citation is usually to one study where adolescents who use cannabis heavily, you know, early in their teens, either decrease IQ or seem to have deviant brain development and that their white and gray matter is sort of out of whack. Now, another study has come out to suggest that this white-gray matter thing has not replicated, and in fact, the effects are not huge when compared to the impact of binge drinking. And that's what I think is so splendid about this new paper, is that it points out that alcohol use at this age is actually much more detrimental, and you can really document changes in brain structure, particularly in those kids who have five drinks or more in an individual occasion with any kind of regularity, as well as you know, teens who drink more than 20 drinks per month. And this is a level that, you know, a lot of teens think is no big deal, and I feel like spreading the word about this is much more important than some of these misplaced alarmist worries about experimenting with cannabis a few times early in life.
Yeah, especially when you look at the culture around teenagers, and especially male teenagers. And this is something that I grew up in, was this binge drinking culture of shotgunning beers and having beer races and playing beer pong and going to the senior kegger. And it seems so culturally ingrained that people don't really have a fear, or they accept it as, you know, boys being boys, or this is something all teenagers go through. And I think that a study like this should really change a few minds, and if it doesn't, it should.
Well, and part of that, I hate to say, was also this kind of forbidden fruit phenomenon where it was like, oh my God, we've probably only got an hour and a half to drink and we're going to get caught, so quick, let's, you know, shotgun everything we can find. And it's sort of a sad situation where, you know, if someone had modeled appropriate alcohol consumption for these folks and pointed out these data on brain structure, I'm extremely optimistic that many of the guys who I went to high school with would have been willing to be more moderate in their consumption.
And this is maybe something you can't answer, but you know, I look back to my teenage years. 1985 is around that area is when I graduated. And back then, we didn't have the uniform 21 drinking age across the country. Back in my state of Idaho, it was 19. Have any researchers looked at any differences in the amount of binge drinking by teenagers since the raise of the drinking age to 21? And maybe that's instigating that forbidden fruit notion?
It's intriguing because the rates of binging have actually dropped, but also the driving intoxicated has dropped, and that's been the big plus for this higher drinking age. Unfortunately, states where there was basically a border, so between Missouri and Illinois, when they had disparate drinking ages, a lot of folks would literally, you know, haul their cars over the Illinois side where there were literally tons of drive-through type liquor stores right on the border, quickly get there, purchase what they could, and then drive back drinking. And clearly, you know, that was a real problem. I know there's a move a number of college presidents have suggested in the Amethyst group that we could decrease the drinking age again to 18, and it would actually be adaptive for a number of college campuses. But the data on actually decreased negative consequences related to alcohol in that 18 to 21-year-old group are actually, you know, suggesting that this was not such a terrible move nationwide.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny, those different laws across the line. Back in my home county, the bars used to all close at 1 in the morning, and across the county line in the next county, the bars closed at 2. So invariably, whenever you were in the first county, around 12:30, all the bars would empty out suddenly, and they'd all head across the county line, and Lord knows that probably increased the drunk driving statistics.
Well, I'm flabbergasted by that, and actually some of the prevention efforts about that have included, you know, you're only allowed to have so many bars in an area.
Yeah.
As a civil libertarian, I'm concerned about that idea, but the data do suggest that does decrease some of these effects.
Well, it's something I love keeping an eye on, especially when we have this regime of legal alcohol and an illegal cannabis. It's always an interesting comparison to me, and I thank you for bringing these up, Dr. Erlewine.
Always a pleasure.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Erlewine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Erlewine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Erlewine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. We have quite a treat for you on today's Daily Toker Tunes, a twofer since I missed yesterday's post, so let's get right to it. On Variety Tuesday during Mary Jane Music Week, we have Mary Jane by Tab from New Jersey. Tab's music is a new style of hip-hop, a mix of trip-hop and rock. He is inspired by intellectual lyrics, serious subject matters, and gritty beats.
To make his unique sound, Tab mixes dark lyrics with complex beats and live instruments. With two albums in the making, Tab is putting 110% into his current projects. To keep updated about Tab, check him out at myspace.com/dondarkzero. D-O-N-D-A-R-K and the number zero. Enjoy today's song that was nominated in the 2008 Marijuana Music Awards, and registered stashers, you can access an MP3 download of this tune. It's Mary Jane by Tab.
Percent of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMA, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
This Reggae Wednesday during Mary Jane Music Week, we have the fantastic Micah Williams from the UK with his song, well, Mary Jane. Micah Williams has been involved with the Marijuana Music Awards since 2007. In 2008, he had a major hit with his smoke song, Babylon in Helicopter. The song reached number one in the New York music charts, and its success resulted in Micah Williams being named by the UK's BBC as 2008 Artist of the Year. You can check out Micah Williams' interview with the BBC at myspace.com, Mr. Williams, with a Z, Mr. Williams,
along with clips of his many great smoke songs. Look out for lots more from Micah Williams as he establishes himself as one of the most promising artists currently coming out of London. And registered stashers, you can get your hands on an MP3 download of this tune. It's Mary Jane by Micah Williams.
Yo, my babes.
Oh, Mary.
You know, no matter what nobody say or nobody do.
Mary, Mary.
I'm here for life. See,
just all the sort of things that. Whoa, whoa.
I got this girl and I love her so. No matter what, I never let her go. I got this girl and I love her so. Never gonna leave you, never gonna let you go.
Yo, Mary, people are queer. Say, oh, anywhere me there, you always near me. Your looks and your perfume vary. You have them and them attention clearly. We roll daily, no if nor maybe. People want we feel left, make them know. Say, me love my girls, them dearly. Green, gold, red, and black, but no white lady.
Mary Jane, you make me feel so fine every day. And that is just no lie. Mary Jane, you make me feel so
with you, my eyes them glisten. Never gonna leave your girl, I won't diss you. Without you in my life, I would miss you. Reminisce to the age of 13. That was the first time when I did kiss you. Roll you up in my sheet and stick you. Use the fire flame and lit you. Yeah, making love with you. That was when I was little and now me get big too. Anyway, me there, you know me, I fi roll with you. Give you quality time, that's no issue. If you leave me, girl, I would miss you. Fuck with you privately and public. To police, see the two of we are fuck. And walk up, nick me, walk up, nick you. True, them well, walk up with you. Them well, walk up with you. Hey.
Mary Jane, you make me feel so fine,
so fine.
Every day, yeah. And that is just no
every
lie
day, no, I ain't
Mary
lying.
Jane, yeah. You make me feel so
me
fine.
And I roll straight,
yeah. I got this girl and I love her so.
Love her so
no
much.
No matter what, I never let her go.
Never gonna let you go.
I got this
hear
girl
that?
And I love yeah. her so. Never gonna leave you, never gonna let you go. Mary Jane, you make me feel so fine every day. And that is just no lie. Mary Jane, you make me feel so fine. Mary Jane, you make me feel so fine every day. And that is just no lie. Mary Jane, you make me feel so
thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre, our deputy director is Paul Armentano, our webmaster is Brian Judy, and web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder that if you're sitting out there wondering when they are going to legalize marijuana, you've got the wrong attitude. When are you going to legalize marijuana? You can get involved and make a difference by joining your local Normal chapter. Check out the web at normal.org and look for local chapters to find the Normal near you. And if there's not a Normal near you, you can start one. Get yourself and four like-minded friends to form your board and send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject chapter request. We'll get you on your way to spreading the growing truth about cannabis in your neck of the woods. I'm Radical Russ, still recovering from the flu, and I want to thank all of you for your well wishes and get well comments and so on. We'll be much better here as the rest of the week goes on, I'm sure of it. Thanks for downloading the podcast, and until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.